Okay. All right, Rabbi Isai, thank you for adjusting to the new time. Hopefully, it allows us to get a little bit more sleep. As you can see in different people's rooms, you can see natural sunlight coming in. So it's nice to get this in during the daytime, I think. Okay, we are on Yud Beis Amud Aleph. That is 12a. And so, because for the next 2 weeks, we have literally, well, right now we have. We definitely have under an hour. I'm just going to ask for a favor. We're going to do a little bit different. I'm going to ask for clarification questions only. And then at the end, God willing, if we have a few minutes before I have to bolt to Mincha, I'll open up for additional questions and insights on top of clarification questions, just so we can get through the material. Okay? All righty. So, Yud Beis Amud Aleph. So, we learned a few permutations last time in the Mishnah. What we learned last time was that if let's say there is no Kohen Gadol when I get sentenced to go to Galus. I'm getting sent to the Eir Mikla. I'm getting sent because I accidentally killed someone. But there's no Kohen Gadol. Well, the issue is, since there's no Kohen Gadol associated with me at the time of my sentencing, I never get to go free from the Eir Mikla because we don't know who to tag it on to. So Nigmar Dino, that's what is going on. So we're going to get a little bit of a gadata in here. Remember, okay, a gadata meaning non-halachic portion, but that is relevant to Eir Miklat. Eir Miklat gets mentioned in it. And then we're going to elaborate a little bit more on it in a way that's not relevant to Ari Miklat per se. So a little bit of a fun gemara here. So Rabbi Huda says, in the name of Rav, Shtei Toyos Ta Yoav Ba'osa Sha. So Yoav ben Tzruya, he was a general for David HaMelech's army. David HaMelech commands his son Shlomo that there are a few debts that haven't been paid yet, so to speak. There are a few people who are deserving of punishment for misdeeds that they committed, and I'm charging you as your first act as king to deal with these people. The general Yoav, who murdered his competitors, he was one of the people on the hit list. So what did Yoav do? Yoav ran into the Mishkan, into the tabernacle, and
Hold
he
on.
sneaked onto the corner of the Mizbeach. And by sneaking onto the corner of the altar, he thought that he would be saved, but that was not the case. So what were his mistakes? Tziv, by Yonos Yoav el Ohel Hashem, by Yechzak b'Karnas HaMizbeach, Yoav flees to the tent of God, the Mishkan. And he grasps onto one of the corners of the altar. Mistake number one. Tashino koi elegago vutavis bakarnosa. Number one, only the roof, the top of the mizbeach, the top of the altar protects, but the corners do not protect you. Number two, Tashino koi el mizbeach beis olamim vutavis mizbeach shel shilo. Number two, only the altar in the temple protects you, not the altar in the tabernacle, in the Mishkan. And Abaye Omer, issue number three, with his assumption, it only protects some a Kohen who is in the middle of performing the services in the temple. Yoav was a general who just happened to flee there. So those were his mistakes. Therefore, they're able to put him to death. Now, why do we bring this up? Because it's similar to an Eir Miklat, and also because the next piece, which naturally flows from this, actually talks about Ari Miklat. So here we go. This is going to be an eschatological piece now. Amar Reish Lakish, Shalosh Tayos Asid Saral Shel Romi Litos. There are three mistakes. Similarly, there are three mistakes that the angel representing Edom, representing Rome, is going to make in the end of days. So what are the three mistakes that the angel, the emissary of Rome, which is an enemy of the Jewish people, is going to make in the end of days? The sieve. Mizeh ba me Edom chametz begadim mivtsara. Who is this coming from? Edom with clothing that's like soiled and red. And it's coming from Bitsara, from Sarah. So what is Bitsara? Toa Shina Kuletis Ella Batsar. Who gola lived Sarah? Mistake number one, the angel of Rome is going to flee to Bitsara instead of Batsar. He thought Bitsara was the city of refuge. Turns out it was Butzar. So no protection there. Mistake number two he made, even if he was in an actual ear miklut, Toashino Koleas El Shogi Vumesid Haya. An ear miklut doesn't protect a deliberate killer. It only protects an accidental killer. The Angel of Rome was bloodthirsty, and so he deliberately brought upon death. And number three, Hayatoashino Koletis El Adamhu Malachu. And mistake number three is that an ear miklut only protects a human being. In fact, we talked about it previously, it only protects perhaps a Jew or a Girtoshav from a Girtoshav, but certainly it doesn't protect an angel. So in the end of days, when God is going to smite the Angel of Rome, Rome doesn't mean literally Rome per se. Rome, I think, in general rabbinic literature has come to actually represent, I guess, like the West, so to speak. So that angel will be smitten from by God. Okay. So that's the end of that piece of Gemara. And interesting agadata that's relevant to your mikvah. Nothing halachic there, but fascinating ideas and something, you know, worth delving into on another occasion for sure. Okay. But let's return back to the halachic segment. Okay, so that was the fun agadata. Now we're going to transition into halach. Amar Rav Avo, Ari Miklat lo nasnu likvura. So Rav Avo stated that a city of refuge is not meant for burial. You're not allowed to bury in an Ir Miklat. Now, we remember from Shir last week that that's not true. So Rav Gemara is going to ask a question. So first, Dixiv, Migrashen, Yulu Vehemtam, Lurukusha, Lukhayasam, Lechaim nasnu velo likvura. So it says in the verse that the Ir Miklat is designated l'chol chayasam, for all of your chayasam, your livelihood, your living needs. So we infer from there the Ir Miklat is meant for the living, not for the dead. But the question is, Mesve, we learned last week, Sham Tehei Diraso, Sham Tehei Misaso, Sham Tehei Graso. It says in the Mishnah that in the Ir Miklat, the refugee, he will dwell, he will die, and he'll be buried there. It says explicitly in the Mishnah. So how do we reconcile the fact that he's buried there then? So the answer is quite simple. Rotziach Shani Degali Be'erachmana, a refugee, an accidental murderer who is a refugee in the Ir Miklat, he's the exception to the rule because God commanded it to be so. Okay, that's rather straightforward. That's always an easy answer. It's like the Kuzari asks, how is it possible if God is against all these different molten images and idolatrous idols, these idols that we're allowed to create Kruvim, we're allowed to create these angels on top of the Ark of the Covenant? So the answer is because God commanded us to do that, so it's not idolatrous. You know, sometimes that's the answer. Okay, moving forward. Kishim she'ir koletes. So remember last week in the Mishnah we learned the same way the city protects the person fleeing, so too the tachum, the outer boundary, protects him as well. Ur minhu, we have a contradiction. It says in another teaching that one shall dwell in the Ir Miklat, and by saying the verse, he should dwell in the Ir Miklat, ba velo betchuma, inside the Ir Miklat, to the exclusion of the surrounding 2,000 amos, the surrounding area, approximately, you can figure out the measurement for yourself. What would it be, like 6,000 feet, whatever it is. So Amar Abai, lo kasha, kan liklo kan landor. Maybe we could say as follows. When it says that one is protected by the tchum of the Ir Miklat, one is protected by the outer boundaries of the city. But as far as the mitzvah of dwelling in the Ir Miklat is concerned, the person being exiled to the Ir Miklat needs to still dwell within the confines, needs to have a living space within the confines of the city. But should he choose to take a stroll, he's allowed to leave the city limits, given that he's still within the general tchum, the outer area of the city. So that is a good answer. The issue is Ladur, typically, I already know that I'm supposed to dwell in the Eir Miklat because I have another teaching. Dein osa sedeh migrash, v'lo migrash sedeh, lo migrash ir, v'lo ir migrash. You don't turn a field with plants into a barren open area, nor vice versa, nor do you turn an open area into a city area, nor do we do vice versa. So we already have an implication that here telling me that, I'm not supposed to turn the tchum, the open areas, into a living area. So then what's the teaching of Vayashaba coming to tell me? Well, if I already know I'm not supposed to live in the tchum, the only thing this additional word in the verse is coming to tell me, the only thing left for it to tell me is I'm not even protected if I take a stroll there. So what is going on here? What then could be the chiddush? What could it be telling me here? So Amar Rav Sheshes lo nitzcha ela mechilas. Maybe you are still protected in the tchum. So what's the additional verse coming to tell me if I know I'm not allowed to live in the tchum? It must be saying I'm not protected by a tchum. No, I'm still protected by a tchum. I would have thought it's only prohibited for me to live above ground. But let's say I dug an underground city in the bottom of the surrounding area of the city, in the bottom of the tchum, underground. I would have thought I'd be able to live there. Comes along the words by Yashav Ba, you shall dwell inside the city. You say, even if I build an underground hobbit hole under the tchum, I still would not be allowed to dwell there. I'd be protected there, but I'm not allowed to set up a residence there. Okay. And that ends that section. Any clarification questions that we have? Yes. Anything that we could clarify?
Yeah. I have a question. I've learned that it was common in that era that walled cities would manage to grow, population expands, and they begin to build houses outside of the wall, and that becomes part of the city. If that is done in a city of refuge, can he live outside the wall of the city amongst the population that is expanded outside the wall?
So it would seem that, number one, even someone who's not a refugee or in the city, not an, I don't know what you call it, exilee, an exile person in the city, there's just a prohibition to put houses on the open area, even if it's for other people. The thing that's unique to the person being exiled is that he's not allowed to dwell outside the city. So what's a nafkamina? The only difference is he can't live underground. In theory, a levi, if he wanted to, living in that city, he could set up a residence under the ground if he wished to do so. But in general, it's saying that if you have open area, you should not convert that into city area. You know, it's kind of like you see that sometimes in like dense populated city areas, like New York City, they'll have to designate this is park area over here, lest the entire place just become high rises. So you need a few blades of grass every now and then. I'm not sure if that's the motive here per se, but that's what the drush is, at least. Okay, moving forward. This is an interesting question. Let's say, so we know that if the rotseach, if the exiled person leaves the Eir Miklat by his own volition, then he could be killed by the Goel Hadam. The question is, you know, I don't know, what if, I'm trying to think of a case of where this could happen. I mean, let's say I just fell asleep on a, you know, I'm on a bus in the city. I fall asleep on the bus, and now the bus leaves the city, and I'm on it, and I wake up, I'm like, oh no, I'm outside the Eir Miklat now. What do I do? So if I accidentally beshogeg leave the city, does the Goel Hadam have a right to kill me, or is he only allowed to kill me if I deliberately chose to leave the city? Tana Rabbanan, v'ratzach Goel Hadam es rotzeach. So the key word in Hebrew is v'ratzach. So does v'ratzach, is that a command? Is that an option? There's ambiguity here. And the Goel Hadam will kill the rotzeach. Is it okay if I don't? I just want to make sure again. Translations are clear. Goladam is the redeeming, is the relative who's avenging the blood of the victim. Rotseach is the person who accidentally killed the victim. Okay, so that, any question just on that translation alone? Is that clear? Okay, good. So that way I don't need to go back and forth because the English translation is awkward. So mitzvah v'yad gola hadam. Opinion number one. We saw this in the Mishnah already. Mitzvah v'yad gola hadam is a mitzvah for the gola hadam to kill the rotzeach when he leaves the city. Ein gola hadam reshus v'yad kol adam. If there's no gola hadam, then anybody is permitted to kill him if he leaves the city. No mitzvah, but they're permitted. Divrei Rav Yossi Agli. That's the opinion of Rav Yossi Agli. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Reshus B'Agol Adam. The Gol Adam only has permission, no mitzvah, certainly not imperative to kill Rotzeach if he leaves, but we let you do it. It's a Reshus. However, the Gol Adam Chayavin Allah, but any other person on the street who decides to kill Rotzeach when he leaves the Yer Miklat, they are liable to penalties for it. Okay? So my time out, Rav Yossi. So far we haven't gotten to the accidentally leaving yet. We're still laying the groundwork. So we're currently talking about a case, just to clarify, of someone deliberately leaving the city. We're gonna introduce a third opinion. The two opinions we just mentioned now are in the Mishnah. We learned that last week. We're gonna choose a third sheet, a third opinion in the Tanayim, and now we're gonna get to the question of what if I leave accidentally. So first of all, before we get to our third opinion, what's the basis of the first two opinions? So my time with Rav Yossi Agli, what's the reason of Yossi Agli that there's a, where is he seeing the pasuk that is a mitzvah for the Gol Adam to kill the Rotzeach? So he says, Miksiv im Rotzeach, does it say if the Rotzeach happens to kill him? No, it says the Rotzeach. So it sounds like he's supposed to kill him. Not im Rotzeach, if he happens to kill a Rotzeach. If it said if implies a reshus, if implies he has permission, it's optional. But, you know, it's okay. Rabbi Akiva, Miksiv Yirtzach, and Rabbi Akiva says that it's a reshus. It's permissible, but not obligatory for him to kill a Rotzeach. Miksiv Yirtzach doesn't say Yirtzach in the Pasuk. It doesn't say he should kill him. It just says Baratzach. He happened to kill him. So based on the ambiguity in the Hebrew word for ratzach, it's unclear whether it's a command or whether it's something that happens to happen. That's what leads to this disagreement between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Aglili, whether there's a mitzvah, an imperative, for the Gol Hadam to kill the Rotzeach when he leaves. However, we have a third opinion that we have not learned yet, brand new for today. Amar Mar Zutra Bar Tubi Amar Rav Rotzeach Yatzu Chutz Atchum Amatzu Gol Adam Bahargu Nerag Alav. Even the Goel Hadam who kills the Rotzeach, even if it's the Goel Hadam who kills him, the Goel Hadam will also be culpable, just like anyone else who kills him. So this is even stricter. Rabbi Akiva said, if a random Joe on the street kills the Rotzeach, we put him to death. He's saying here, even the Goel Hadam is culpable. That's a new idea. We didn't know that one until now. But then we might be asking, wait a minute. So then what's the perk of being a Gol Hadam if you also get punished for killing the Rotzeach? What then is a Gol Hadam, right? So first of all, come on. Look Rav Yossi, look Rav Akiva. So apparently this opinion is not in accordance with Rav Yossi Agli or Rabbi Akiva. Rather, Hu d'amar ki aitana, d'tani Rabbi Elazar Omer, ad amdu lifnei ha'eda l'mishpah. It's based on the verse that says, until he stands before the congregation in judgment. Ma tama lomar, lefi shenemar v'ratzak gol hadam es rotzeach. So what's it going to teach me? Because it says in the verse, and the gol hadam will kill the rotzeach. Yogo miyad. I would have thought the rotzeach could just kill him extrajudicially. I would think he could just work outside the court system. Tavalomar ad amdu lifnei ha'eda l'mishpah. That's why the Torah had to give us an additional verse that says until he stands before the Beis Din in judgment. once the basin rules that this person was a murderer and deserving of death, that's when the Gol Adam can put him to death.
Okay, great. Wow, that verse, it's pretty explicit. It says, you cannot take action to kill this Gol Adam until Beis Din permits you and Beis Din rules that this person is supposed to be put to death. Now, that's good for the rule of law. But the question is, how did Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Akiva say the Gol Adam is allowed to kill the Rotzeach extrajudicially? How do they justify it based on an explicit verse that says you have to wait for Beis Din to put him to death? So Ahumi Vayle Lichtitania, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Nailas, and Heshiro, Efshark, and Nevesh, and Shaima, Misan, and so Achiyama, Beis Din Acher. They use this verse to teach me a separate halakha, not related to Ir Mikla. They use the verse to tell me that in a case where, here's a good question. You have three rabbis, a Beis Din, that saw Reuben kill Shimon. So you would think the Beis Din say, you know, it's even better. You know, if you told me that you saw, if two witnesses came before me and told me they saw Reuben kill Shimon, I still need to rely on the testimony of the witnesses. I wasn't there myself. I would think if I was there in person and I literally saw the murder take place, that's even better than having the witnesses come before me and tell me their testimony and risk some form of broken telephone. If the whole Beis Din literally got to see the murder in front of their very eyes, what could be better than that? That's what I would have thought to say. However, we have a principle in halacha of ein eid naseh dayan, that a witness cannot be a judge as well. This comes up in the laws of Kiddush HaKodesh in Rosh Hashanah. When we talk about, it used to be, we didn't just look at the luach, at the calendar, but we would look, but they would look at the moon, and then they would come to the court, to the Sanhedrin, and they would tell them, we saw that there's a new moon to clear Rosh Chodesh. So if the Beis Din itself saw the moon, they would have to go in front of a different Beis Din and report to them. That's how the process works. The verse comes to tell me, I would have thought we don't need witnesses if they saw it themselves. Talmud Lomar, they need to then go before a different Beis Din and give over their testimony. Because then it's lacking due process. Okay. Clear? What do we make of that? All good?
Good.
I think that, you know, and I think, you know, a number of us may have been uncomfortable with the notion of the extrajudicial nature of someone just running around and being able to kill another person outside a court of law. So it would seem that if, you know, you, if our lawyers here had a certain discomfort with that, at least there's a shita mentioned here in the Gemara that accords with that concern to a certain degree. Okay.
Rabbi, excuse me, I lost my place. Could you help me out?
Are you following with the page with the actual Tzur Sadaf, an actual page of Gemara?
No, I'm in Sefaria.
Well, it's hard for me to tell exactly, but we're basically up to the words Tan Rabbanon in Yatsa, Yatsa Ritzeah.
What daf?
Yud Bezim and Aleph 12a, and we are a little bit below the midpoint of the page. So that helps you scroll it all.
Yud Bezim Aleph? Okay.
Yud Beis Amid Aleph, yes. Okay, now we are getting to what I whet our appetites for, which is what if I left the Ir Mikla by mistake? You know, either I'm a ditz, I just didn't notice, or like I said, imagine, you know, you're on the metro bus inside the city, and you know, that would happen to me when I was in Israel, that I thought I was on like a local Eged bus, but it turns out it was, you know, an express bus to Tel Aviv. So you got to be careful which bus you get onto. So imagine he stepped on the wrong bus and, oh no, I'm outside of the city now. What do I do? And all of a sudden, the Gol Adam lying in wait pounces upon him. So what's the halacha? Tanu Rabbanan, let's learn the braisa. Im yatsa yatsa harotzeah. It says in the verse, im yatsa yatsa harotzeah. So, Yotso Yetze HaRotzeach, you want to get the Nikudos right. So use what? That's odd. Why does it say the word twice? Yatso yetse. Why does the Torah have to repeat itself? So I would have thought only el b'mezeh. Only if you deliberately leave the city, he could kill you. The shogim nine. Where do I see in the verse that even if I accidentally leave the city, that he could kill me? Tama lomar im yatso yatso mikol mako. Because it says the word yatso yetse twice, it teaches me. No matter for what reason I left the city, as long as I left the city, if I am objectively outside the city, we don't ask you what you're doing outside the city. The fact is you're out and you're no longer protected. So it's, you know, you almost think of the city as a force field. Once you're outside that force field, he could get you. That's it. That's opinion number one. However, we have in another Bryce, another Tanyanic statement, which contradicts this. But Tanya, we're taught in the Braisa, the Mazen Narag v'shogeg Gola. If you leave the Ir Miklat deliberately, then he could kill you. V'shogeg Gola, if you leave the Ir Miklat accidentally, then we just send you back to Gola. So we send you back into the Ir Miklat. So I don't get it. What's the halacha? Am I culpable if I leave? Can he kill me if I leave or not, if I leave accidentally? So the Gemara tries to resolve this and says this disagreement between the two brisos is contingent on a different dispute. Lo kasha, ha kiman domar amina divrei Torah kalasha b'nei Adam, ha kiman domar lo amina divrei Torah kalasha b'nei Adam. So this is a very important idea to remember from today's shiur. Of course, I always encourage us to remember everything we can, but this is a very general important concept to know in Shas, which is there's a debate about Dibur Torah Kalasha B'nei Adam. The Torah, to a certain degree, talks in a way that people talked back in the day. But do we assume the Torah was really speaking in a way that one man would write to another man? Or do we assume that anything that God writes in there, every word, has some sort of meaning for us to extract from it? A very important idea. What does that mean for us? Well, our basis of saying that someone who accidentally leaves the Ir Miklat could still be killed by the Rotzeach is contingent on us deriving that from a superfluous word of Yetzeh. I've been saying twice, Yetzo Yetzeh. However, if Hashem wrote the Torah in a way that mimics the way people talked back then, so that it could be easier to read, whatever it might be, maybe we shouldn't be making anything of the fact that it says Yatso Yetse twice. However, if we understand that literally every word that appears extra to you, me reading it, has some sort of halachic meaning for us to extract from it, then we would have to assume by saying Yatso Yetse twice that it comes to include even someone who leaves Bashogate from the Ir Miklat, that they could be put to death by the Goel Hadam. That's the basis of the dispute here. However, so Amar Abai, and therefore Abai suggests, Mistabra Kemadam or Dibra Torah Kalasher B'nei Adam. It makes sense to me that we should say the Torah speaks in the language of man, at least in this case here, from a logical standpoint. Without him weighing in on that particular dispute, he says that Shita makes more sense. Why? The beginning, the ending should not be more stringent than the beginning. What does that mean? How did I get myself into this mess? I got myself into this mess by accidentally killing somebody. Accidentally killing somebody. And even if I accidentally killed somebody, what's the worst thing that happens to me? I get sent to the Ir Miklat. So I've sofo b'mezen nerag b'shogi gola. So if I accidentally leave the Ir Miklat, is leaving the Ir Miklat really something that should be worse than accidentally killing somebody? If I accidentally kill someone, I don't get put to death. I just go to Gullus. So if I accidentally leave the Ir Miklat, also they should just put me back in Gullus instead of allowing me to be killed. So that is Abai's point there. So therefore Abai concludes, and Gemara seems to conclude, that someone who accidentally leaves the Ir Miklat for Shogig, we just put him back in the Ir Miklat, the Gol Adam is not permitted to kill him. I guess the issue is, though, you know, I can imagine a whole trial determining whether he left Bashoging or not. You know, that's like an easy one. You go ahead and say, oh, it was a mistake. He was Bashoging. You know, how do you prove Bashoging in that case? Mm-hmm. I accidentally got on the express bus in Tel Aviv outside. You know, I'm not sure how you prove that. But I guess if he's dead already, then it's a non-starter. Okay. Moving forward, let's get to the Mishnah. This is an interesting one. Judd, I think you possibly asked this question to me a while back when we started the Masechta. You'll tell me if this was your question. The question is, let's say a father kills his son. What happens in terms of Gol Adam? Does the father become his own Gol Adam? Does the other son become a Gol Adam? Does a grandson become a Gol Adam? I think, Judd, did you ask me that? Was that you who asked me that a while back?
Close.
Okay, possibly. Oh, you're muted. You're muted, but I see your mouth moving. I can't hear you, Judd, but I'm giving you credit anyway. Okay. All right. So Tani Chada. Ashaharag Bino Nasalo Gol Hadam. A father who kills his son, God forbid, Bishogig, the other son, the brother of the victim, becomes a Gol Hadam against his father. However, again, we have a contradicting Braisa. Betanya Irach, Ein Beno Nasalo Gol Hadam. Another Braisa says, diametrically opposed, the antithesis. The other brother does not become a Gol Hadam. Great. What's the basis of the dispute? What's the Nekudas HaMachlokas? What, you know, what's the basis of their disagreement? So maybe we could plug this into the dispute in our Mishnah. Lemahar Rabbi Yosigli, Lemahar Rabbi Akiva. Maybe, this is an interesting suggestion, maybe it's contingent on whether we understand the Gol Hadam's right to kill the Rotzeach. Is it a right or is it a mitzvah, an obligation? If it's a mitzvah, then we can suggest that the mitzvah of avenging the blood of his brother supersedes the prohibition of killing and striking his father. However, if it's only a reshus, I only have permission to kill the Rotzeach who killed my brother, then my reshus, my permission, is not going to supersede the prohibition of killing my father. So that's an interesting point over there. Maybe it's contingent on that dispute in our Mishnah, whether it's a mitzvah or not. So, however, the Tizmara, does that make sense, the Gemara asks? The question the Gemara asks now is that it doesn't make sense, even if you say it's a mitzvah for someone to avenge their brother's blood, still, it's not going to supersede the prohibition to kill one's father. Because it says it's forbidden to strike one's father, to put him into excommunication. The only exception to the rule, the only exception, is if he's a masis, if he's trying to bring people to worship Avodah Zarah, to worship idolatry. That's the only exception on the books. Since that's the only exception on the books, apparently, you're not allowed to kill him if you're a Gol Hadam. So that's a question that we got.
But I kind of would just rather just do the whole thing.
If we could just mute ourselves wherever that noise is. Oh, sorry, was someone asking a question or is that noise from the background? Okay. So, El Lokasha. Haba Beno, Baba Ben Beno. What do we mean when we said in that Brisa earlier that a father who kills his son, Nasalo Gol Hadam? You notice there's an ambiguous pronoun. I added in before that the brother becomes the Gol Hadam. It doesn't say the brother becomes the Gol Adam. It just says, Nasalo Gol Adam. He becomes the Gol Adam. Who's he? It's not referring to the brother of the victim. It's referring to the son of the victim. The son of the victim, who's the grandson of the Rotzeach, is allowed to kill the Rotzeach. Why? Zadie, close your ears for this one. It says in Rashi, B'benosha haruk ha-marshu ben b'nosha rotzeach, because as far as the grandson of the Rotzeach is concerned, Beno Musar al Kvodo, a grandson is not commanded as far as Kavod is concerned to a grandfather, halachically. Now, this Rashi gets into a lot of trouble because we know actually, we learn from the word kabed es avicha vesimecha, the extra S over there comes to include grandparents. So the fact that Rashi makes a statement, eino musar al kavodo, it sounds absolute. A grandson is not commanded on the kavod of his grandfather. So, you know, for the purpose of giving kavod to my grandfather here, I'm going to bring in the other shita, the more mainstream shita is, yes, a grandson has to give kavod, has to give honor to his grandfather, but there's, that's like, what do you call it, a corollary to the idea of giving honor to one's parents. So when the honor of one's parents and the honor of one's grandparents are in conflict, the honor of one's parents is prioritized over one's grandparents. And that's precisely the conflict here. You have a grandparent and you have a parent. Whose honor takes precedence? The honor of the parent. Therefore, the grandchild is able to avenge the blood of his father by avenging it on his grandfather. We should never know such things.
Don't even think about it.
Don't even think about it. No plans. All right, we got to jump into the mission. We got 7 minutes left. Into the Mishnah. Completely new idea over here. I mean, still ir miklat, but completely new sugya. Ilan shu omei betoch ha-tchum v'nofa no techutz ha-tchum. Let's say I have a tree that's inside the tchum of the ir miklat, but its branches are right over the border, are outside the tchum. O omei chutz ha-tchum v'nofa no techutz ha-tchum. Or let's say the opposite case. The tree trunk is outside the tchum, but the branches lean into the tchum. The Mishnah says, "Hakolich achar nof." We go based on the branches. So this part we're going to actually move a little bit fast through, only because we don't have much time. But B, because this sugi next, the Gemara on the next page has no clear stopping point until the Mishnah. That means we're going to have to actually start review quickly from the beginning of this Gemara next time. So I'm going to try to explain well now quickly. But if you don't get it completely, do not despair. We will review it, God willing, at the beginning of next time. So the Mishnah says a tree's status is based on location of its branches. If the trunk is in Hawaii, but the branches are in Australia, then that tree, for halakhic purposes, for an ir miklat, is considered to be in Australia. Crazy case, but just to illustrate the point. But the Gemara says this idea is contradicted. Raminhi ilakshu ome besoch befnim v'nota lechutz ome bechutz v'nota lefnim mikinegah chomer lefnim kilefnim mikinegah chomer lechutz kilechutz. In the laws of Meister Sheni, very quickly, the laws of Meister Sheni are that I bring my fruits to Yerushalayim every 3 years, on the third year and the sixth year of a Shemitah cycle. And it's a mitzvah to eat those fruits in Jerusalem, in Yerushalayim. Now, the question is, though, for these purposes, what's considered to be in Jerusalem? So let's say I have a tree that the trunk is in Jerusalem, but the leaves are outside, or the branches are in Jerusalem, but the trunk is outside. The Mishnah in Meister Sheni says that we go based on where you're located. So if you are on the branches, then where you're located on the branch, we can basically divide the tree. Where the trunk is, that's where the trunk is. Where the branch is, if the branch is inside the wall, then it's considered inside the wall. If the branch is outside the wall, it's outside the wall. If the trunk's inside the wall, then the trunk part's inside the wall, while the branches are considered outside the wall. Not that the whole tree gets one status, but we split the status into two. We literally just look at where the tree is along the wall. Inside is inside, outside is outside. This contradicts our Mishnah, which says that the trunk status follows the branches status. So how do we reconcile this? Maaser ari miklat karamis? You can't ask a contradiction between the laws of Maaser and the laws of ari miklat. Why? Why would I think that there's a distinction? Usually we pride halakha on being uniform across one area to another. But here there's a reason to distinguish. Maaser b'choma tala rachmana. When you look in the verses, Meiser is contingent on being within the walls, whereas Ari Miklat are contingent on the word on dira, on dwelling, right? Remember to say, Shem te he dirasam, there you shall dwell. So meaning, one can live, in theory, on the branches of a tree, one cannot live, you can't settle on a trunk of a tree. So therefore, for Ari Mikla purposes, it's contingent on where the branches are, because Ari Mikla are all about where you dwell, not where you're standing, but where you dafka dwell. And so therefore, the whole tree status for Ari Mikla purposes follows the branches, because that's the part of the tree where someone can dwell. That's the logic in it. Okay, that's resolved. But what about for Rami Meiser? But
I'm going to Minyan.
Okay, Zadie, so we'll review the rest next time. Don't worry, I have to run 2 seconds also. So for Rami Meiser, I'm Meiser. I have a contradiction, though, between one case in Meiseris and another case in Meiseris. Natalia is talking to the Brysa. Yushalayim halakarno, bar mikla halakarno. I have a Bryce, a Mishnah, actually, which says that in Yushalayim, we go based on the branches. And for Ari Miklat also, we go based on the branches. Wow, that fits beautifully with our Mishnah. Even for Meiser, we go based on the branches, it says in this other Mishnah in Meiser. Great. But what do we do with that first Mishnah dealing with Meiser then, which says it's based on location, not based on the branches? So Amar Rav Kahana, Lokasha, Harabi Yudva Rabbanan. One Mishnah is according to Rabbanan, which says it's based on each part of the tree. But this Mishnah, which accords with our Mishnah, is based on Rabbi Yehuda. The timing of Rabbi Yehuda, Meribim, Marahach, Achar Pischa, Bilha, Alach, Achar Pischa. Rabbi Yehuda said, if you have a cave, we determine location based on the entryway of the cave. Similarly, we determine a tree based on its branches. So for those who are keeping score, so Rabbi Yehuda, at this point in the Gemara, is the Tana of our Mishnah and the Tana of these other Mishnayos, which say everything is contingent on the branches. Whereas the first Mishnah that we quote in the Gemara, which said things go based on the location of where the trunk is and where the branches are, respectively, that is the Shita of the Rabbanan. But our Mishnah is in accordance to Rabbi Yehuda, who says it's always based on the branches, not just for Ari Mikla, by the way, but even for Meiser. And God willing, we will pick it up with this next time. We'll review this at the beginning, God willing, next time, and we'll finish, God willing, the Gemara next time as well. So, Yasher Koach, everyone. Thank you all for
coming. Thank you, thank you.
And hopefully, as the weeks go on, we will have more time, and I'll be in touch. We might actually start offering a Gemara class in shul with a Zoom hybrid option. So that way, people who are also going to Mincha, we could come in person, learn together. That way, for those who are on Zoom and aren't able to come in person, you won't be missing out. You'll still be able to learn the same way we are right now. So I'll be in touch about that when I figure it out. Okay. Have a good one, everyone.
Hopefully, thank you. Good job.
Good job.
Thank you, Rabbi.